It's now, what, 12 minutes to nine. Here's an idea. Get rid of the state. All of it. Let a free market run unfettered. What would be the consequence? Well, Dominic Frisbee, columnist for Money Week, once an actor, once a comedian, says it would be wholly good for us. He's not being entirely funny. He's serious. Welfare, obviously, would become the responsibility of individuals. There'd be no restrictions on trade. No bureaucracy, of course. We would, he says, all be happier. He's here to explain. And here to tussle with him is Neil Lawson, who's chair of the left-wing think tank Compass. You are being entirely serious, Dominic, are you?
Yes, I am being absolutely serious from an ideal point of view. The practicalities of getting rid of the state are rather more difficult, but they are nevertheless possible. If I can start by saying, if you imagine where we were in the year 2000, and since then we have seen two stock market crashes of 1929 proportions and a financial crisis that almost brought down the entire banking system. We've got interest rates at 0.25%, and they've been like that, or 0.5% in the UK, and they've been like that for 5 years. Yeah. Unprecedentedly low rates. We've got this kind of tide of anger that you're seeing with the Russell Brand and the Occupy movement. And
there's no argument about anger, but you say, for example, there are really no areas where you think the state couldn't be replaced by private firms who do it better. So let's get the Royal Bank of Scotland to run our schools. I mean, you can't say the banks have collapsed, they're dreadful, and then say, well, look, let's do away with the state and let the banks run the health service.
Well, if you had a genuinely free market, the banks would have been allowed to go bust, and something better would have come along and replaced them.
Can I just be clear about what sort of society it is that you'd ideally want to see? I mean, would there be any collective services at all?
I like to look at the 19th century as a kind of ideal. And what you saw in the 19th century in terms of the provision of welfare, of education...
Dickensian welfare.
Well, Dickens was writing about the early part of the 19th century, and he was also a novelist. He was dealing in fiction and exaggeration. But in the latter part of the 19th century, we saw the emergence of the free societies, and we saw an incredible growth in education from 1800 to about 1870, and literacy numbers multiplied many, many times over before the state started providing it. The friendly societies, which provided welfare and healthcare and so on,
but
in the context of the world in which they were operating...
It was so wonderful in 1870, why did people think that the state might have a role in education?
Well, there was a big ideological argument about it at the time, and there was this kind of underclass, this 5% at the bottom of society, and it was deemed that they needed some kind of help to lift them out of poverty and everything else. And so we saw... And so the state started...
You don't think state education has done anything for anyone?
Well, it's clearly done a great deal for a lot of people, but I suggest that there is something much better that could happen at a much lower price. But the problem is, it cannot exist while the government is taxing people. You know, I can't afford to pay my taxes and then pay school fees. But if I didn't have to pay my taxes, I could afford to provide education for my children. And
well, let me bring Neil Lawson in at this point, because you two should discuss this.
Well, the state did withdraw. It withdrew from the city. It allowed the casino economy to do as it wanted. And they nearly, you know, wrecked not just the economy, but society. Money nearly stopped coming out of the cash machines because the state withdrew from the City of London. And at the 11th hour, it was only the intervention of the state to prop up the failing banks, which kept the money flowing and stopped, well, could have been a few days from anarchy. So the state was important. Look, the state can humiliate people. It humiliates black people when police stop and search them on the streets because they're black. It humiliates poor people in benefits office because they're poor. But it delivers babies. It delivers hot meals to old people with love, care and compassion. The issue is not the rejection of the state. The issue is the reform of the state so we get less humiliation, less intrusion and more love, care and compassion.
Dominic Frisby.
Just coming back to your issue with the city there, yes, there was a great deal of deregulation that occurred, and that deregulation is the cause of a great deal of the crisis, the financial crisis. For example, you know, the separation of investment banking from ordinary retail banking. But the one area where the state is hugely involved in the city is that the state and banks, between them, are responsible for the monetary system. They are responsible for the creation of money. And That is not a free market. If a free market was at work, a free market wouldn't have the monetary system that we currently operate. And one of the big themes of my book is that it is actually our system of money that is not only responsible for the growth of the state, but responsible for a great many of the atrocities that are perpetrated by it. Now, if I can give you one example of that. In the up until 1914, the world was on a gold standard. And so this gold effectively was an independent money. But in 1914, in order to print the money that we needed for World War One, the state took us off the gold standard in the UK, and Germany and France were taken off the gold standard. Now, World War One could never have happened to anything like the same extent if the state had been restrained by independent money. Now, I think that is an incredible thought. If you think of the damage that World War One has done to industrial Britain, to the world, to the environment, it couldn't have happened without state control of money.
Look, the point is that markets don't have morals. Human beings have morals. And the point is that we have a set of rights, of things that we should have, secure homes, enough food, security through our lives. That can only be provided through the unique auspices of the state, because through the state, we are all equal. Now, that isn't a justification of the remote, the top-down, bureaucratic 20th century state. It is to say that there are a collective and democratic set of rules which recognise our shared and joint humanity. The objective is to work out how, in the 21st century, we can have a state which is accountable, local, human, loving and caring. That's Dominic. The challenge, not its rejection.
I couldn't agree more with your point there, Neil, about human beings. And one of the big themes of this book is that most of the time, human beings are good and want to do well. And, for example, human beings want to give. But when the state has a monopoly on giving, as it does with welfare, it becomes impossible for human beings to give of their own free will.
But if it's charity, then charity can be withdrawn. It can be given and withdrawn. That is not a right. No one can exist in a secure life through charity. It's only the collective and democratic and agreed basis of the state that we can find security and therefore the freedom that we all cherish.
My theme is that welfare can be provided to a much higher standard at a much lower cost if the government wasn't involved in it.
Well, these ideas, which are fascinating ones, are in Dominic Frisby's book, which is called Life After the State. And the rest is in these pages. Dominic Frisby and Neil Lawson from Compass, thank you very much indeed.
4 minutes to nine, as we approach the 100th anniversary of the Great War, we're just talking about that, we will hear a lot about those...